Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, November 15th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a dark and chilly 33 degrees, perfect for hibernation here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Monday? We titled the show Imagitron AI, Humanized Rats, Brains, Optogenetics, and Genetic Switches. We looked at a lot of crazy things. They are now using those little mini brain balls and growing small human brain organoids and implanting them into rats and mice. And lo and behold, they discovered that not only did the neurological connections occur on their own to the mouse gray matter, but also the circulatory system. So they can just see what happens when they grow these little mini brain balls inside of mice and rats. Hopefully they don't become humanized or able to talk. We also took a look at Imagitron, which was the imagination machine created by a technology company utilizing mentally unstable artificial intelligence to come up with creative solutions to problems. We found out when we read more about that they were selling this technology to the Department of Defense and all kinds of places where you definitely would not want to have a mentally unstable AI. And this leads us all back to the brain. We've spent a lot of time looking at brains and ways to manipulate brains, some of the technology and the research going into brains. And one of those was optogenetics. We've covered optogenetics on quite a number of shows now, but it is very disturbing because we haven't looked at it in quite a while. When you start looking at some of the technology and how it is being utilized now, you start to discover that all of those deep, dark, dystopian nightmares that we had had 20, 30 years ago are potentially not only coming true, but it's even worse than you ever imagined. So they are able to manipulate circuits within the brain and turn things on and off with a few flashes of light. Right now they are working with blue wavelengths, and if I'm not mistaken, it was around the 100 nanometer field, but they are experimenting with red and violet and other ranges within the visible spectrum, as well as infrared, to see what switches that can flip inside of the human brain. But not only switches that it can flip, it could turn a mouse. I'm trying to remember, there were three things that they had listed, but one was to make it aggressive. Of course, they're also trying to use this for controlling motion. There was a dragonfly. You know, I didn't pull this up, but I wanted to, so let's see if we can find it. Dragonfly and opto genetics. They had put these little LEDs in front of the dragonfly's eyeballs. Maybe this is the backpack. I'm not sure. Well, let's click and see what happens. He's got a little backpack. He does too. Oh, yeah, here we go. Dragonfly eye. We covered this one last year, but I think we should take a look at this. Robo dragonfly, tiny backpack turns insect into a cyborg. And this is out of livescience.com, February 2nd, 2017. So at the beginning of this year, scientists look to flying animals, birds, bats, and insects for inspiration when they design airborne drones. And we'll have to talk about some airborne drones. I saw the Future of Life Society with Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking put out a new video just as the UN was beginning to meet on autonomous killer drones and weaponry. But researchers are also investigating how to use this technology to interact with and even guide animals as they fly, enhancing by unique adaptations that allow them to take to the air. To that end, engineers have fitted dragonflies with tiny backpacks mounted to controllers that issue commands directly to the neurons controlling the insect's flight. And I remember we read about the moth where they embedded some sort of fiber optic wires into them while they were in the pupa stage, and then they grew. And once they grew into full-blown moths, they could literally use a remote control to steer this thing. This project, and this is the backpack dragonfly, is known as Dragonfly Eye, and it uses optogenetics a technique that employs light to transmit signals to neurons. The researchers have genetically modified dragonfly neurons to make them more light sensitive, and we found out just the other day that they can use an opsin, a protein that is extracted out of green algae, in order to do that, and thereby easier to control through measured light pulses. Dragonflies have large heads, long bodies, and two pairs of wings that don't always flap in sync, according to a 2007 study published in the Journal of Physics Review Letter. And the study authors found that dragonflies maximize their lift when they flap both sets of wings together, and they hover by flapping their wings out of sync, though at the same rate. And meanwhile, separate muscles controlling each of the four wings allows dragonflies to dart, hover, and turn on a dime with exceptional precision, scientists found in 2014. And if you have ever been surrounded by a nest of dragonflies, and that did happen to me once, it is a pretty scary feeling, because some dragonflies can bite, I believe, and they are pretty aggressive. So don't get near a dragonfly nest next to a pond at a picnic table on a sunny Sunday afternoon. Researchers, this would be frightening if they turned this behavior onto autonomous drones, let's say. Researchers used high-speed video footage to track dragonflies and build computer models to better understand the insect's complex behaviors. And they presented their findings at the 67th annual Fluid Dynamics meeting, according to a statement released by the American Physical Society. Dragonfly Eye sees these tiny flight masters as potentially controllable flyers that would be smaller, lighter, and stealthier than anything else that is man-made, says Jesse Wheeler, a biomedical engineer at the Charles Stark Draper Laboratory in Massachusetts and a principal investigator on the Dragonfly Eye program. We're going to have little cyborg robots. Now, guys, here's the thing. As we are looking at this, we were just talking about dragonflies here. We mentioned the moths. But remember, they are doing research on human brain organoids created from human cells and turning them into human neurons, and then watching how they develop and inserting little things or splicing and dicing or flashing little flashes of light to see how they react. And this is going to be eventually control over all of biology. It's happening right now, I'm afraid. And that is the end game. So this project is a collaboration. It has been developed with the backpack that controls the dragonfly. And experts are identifying and enhancing steering neurons located in the dragonfly's nerve cord, inserting genes that make it more responsive to light. The system pushes the boundaries of energy harvesting, motion sensing, algorithms, and miniaturization with optogenetics, all in a system small enough for an insect to wear. Even smaller than the dragonfly backpack are components created by some of these companies called optotrodes. These are optical fibers supple enough to wrap around the dragonfly's nerve cord so that engineers can target only the neurons related to flight. In addition to controlling insect flight, the tiny flexible optotrodes could have applications in human medicine as well, added Wheeler. Ding, ding. And someday these tools could advance medical treatments in humans, resulting in more effective therapies with fewer side effects. Now, I've warned you guys about this before. They want into our brains with the Brain Initiative that was initiated by Obama. There was billions of dollars that was poured into being able to map the way the brain works and the way to manipulate the human brain. And this was just a part of it. Here's an announcement from the National Institute of Health, from their main page on the Brain Initiative. What is the Brain Initiative? Well, the Brain Initiative, through advancing innovative neurotechnologies, more affectionately known as BRAIN, is aimed at revolutionizing our understanding of the human brain. By accelerating the development and application of innovative technologies, researchers will be able to produce a revolutionary new dynamic picture of the brain that, for the first time, shows how individual cells and complex neural circuits interact, both in time and space. Remember, they do have George Church working on this at Harvard, mapping neurons with barcodes. Long desired by researchers seeking new ways to treat, cure, and even prevent brain disorders, This picture will fill a major gap in our current knowledge and provide unprecedented opportunities for exploring exactly how the brain enables the human body to record, process, utilize, store, and retrieve vast quantities of information, all at the speed of thought. Do you want to let federal agencies into your brain? Because I know I don't want to. So if you click through, you see that there is a topic called Brain 2025 on the National Institute of Health website. The human brain is the source of all of our thoughts, emotions, perceptions, actions, and memories. And remember, to understand the brain is to build better artificial intelligence. And it confers on us the abilities to make us human while simultaneously making each of us unique. Over recent years, neuroscience has advanced to the level that we can envision a comprehensive understanding of the brain in action, spanning molecules, cells, circuit systems, and behaviors. This vision, in turn, inspired the Brain Initiative. And on April 2, 2013, Obama launched the Brain Initiative to, quote, accelerate the development and application of new technologies that will enable researchers to produce dynamic pictures of the brain that show how individual brain cells and complex neural circuits interact at the speed of thought. In response to this grand challenge, the National Institute of Health convened a working group of the advisory committee to the director of the NIH to develop a rigorous plan for achieving the scientific vision. The report presents the findings and recommendations of the working group, including the scientific background and rationale for the Brain Initiative as a whole, and for each of the seven major goals articulated in this report. In addition, we include specific deliverables, timelines, cost estimates for these goals, as required by the director. So let's take a look at these separate bullet points. Number one, we want to discover diversity, identify and provide experimental access to the different brain cell types to determine their role in health and disease. And I'm sure that many brain balls are involved in this. It is within reach to characterize all cell types in the nervous system and to develop tools to record, mark, and manipulate these precisely defined neurons in a living brain. We envision an integrated systemic census of neuronal and glial cell types and a new genetic and non-genetic tools to deliver genes, proteins, and chemicals to cells of interest in non-human animals as well as in humans. Number two, maps at multiple scales generate circuit diagrams that vary in resolution from synapses to the whole brain, and that is part of this Allen 3D brain reconstruction that they just did. It is increasingly possible to map connected neurons and local circuits and distributed brain systems, enabling an understanding of the relationship between the neuronal structures and functions. We envision improved technologies for anatomical reconstruction of neural circuits at all scales, from non-invasive whole human brain imaging to dense reconstruction of synaptic inputs and outputs at a subcellular level. And that would be to build Skynet. Number three, brain in action. Produce dynamic pictures of a functioning brain by developing and applying improved methods for large-scale monitoring of neural activity. Ding, ding, ding. Now, wait a second. That was part of the 21st Century Cures Act as well. Neural activity monitoring. We should seize the challenge of recording dynamic neuronal activity from complete neural networks over long periods of time in areas of the brain. There are promising opportunities for both improving existing technologies and for developing entirely new technologies for neuronal recording, including methods based on electrodes, optics, molecular genetics, and nanoscience, encompassing different facets of brain activity. Number four, demonstrating causality, link brain activity to behavior with precise interventional tools that can change neural circuit dynamics. Well, once they identify that you have some sort of neural activity anomaly by the 24/7 non-invasive large-scale brain monitoring, then they're going to find ways to fix you. This is where I'm telling you guys, this is like beyond any nightmare I have ever had about the future of technology. I don't want someone screwing around with my brain. I don't want someone tinkering with my neurons, flipping switches on and off, but we found out that is exactly what technologies like optogenetics can do by directly activating and inhibiting populations of neurons. Neuroscience is progressing from observational to causal, and much more is possible to enable the immense potential of circuit manipulation in your brain. A new generation of tools for optogenetics, chemogenetics, and biochemical and electromagnetic modulation should be developed for use in animals and eventually in human patients. Ding, 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 ding. Number five, identify fundamental principles. Remember, this is all on the National Institute of Health website. Identify fundamental principles. Produce conceptual foundations for understanding the biological bases of mental processes through development of new theoretical and data analysis tools. And that is putting the AI in charge. Rigorous theory, modeling, and statistics are advancing our understanding of complex nonlinear brain functions where human intuition fails. New kinds of data are accruing at increasing rates. Step up for your fMRI. And mandating new methods of data analysis and interpretation. And to enable progress in theory and data analysis, we must foster collaborations between experimentalists as well as scientists from statistics, physics, mathematics, engineering, and computer science. So now we are talking about merging man with the machine. Number six, advancing human neuroscience, develop innovative technologies to understand the human brain and treat its disorders, create and support integrated human brain research networks. So consenting humans, and that's what it's all going to be about, whether or not you are consenting to them diagnosing mental disease on a spectrum through the sound of your voice or some of your behavioral patterns. We're going to get to that a little bit later here. Consenting humans who are undergoing diagnostic brain monitoring and receiving neural technology for clinical applications provide an extraordinary opportunity for scientific research. And I'm beginning to wonder, guys, all those different CAT scans they put me through, and there were four of them in a very short period of time, I'm wondering whether or not I've been entered into this mass research database. This setting enables researchers on human brain function, the mechanisms of human brain disorders, the effect of therapy, and the value of diagnostics. Meeting this opportunity requires closely integrated research teams performing to the highest ethical standards of clinical research, and new mechanisms are needed to maximize the collection of this priceless information and ensure that it benefits people with brain disorders. And last but not least, number seven, from brain initiative to the brain, integrate new technological and conceptual approaches produced from goals number 1 through 6 to discover how dynamic patterns of neural activity are transformed into cognition, emotion, perception, and action in health and disease. Most important outcomes of the brain initiative will be comprehensive mechanistic understandings of mental function that emerge from the synergistic application of the new technologies, a lot of gobbledygook, and conceptual structures developed under the Brain Initiative. The overarching vision of the Brain Initiative is captured by goal number 7, combining these approaches into a single integrated science of cells, circuits, brain, and behavior. For example, immense value is added if recordings are conducted from identified cell types whose anatomical connections are established in the same study. And such an experiment is currently an exceptional tour de force. With new technology, it could become routine every time you go to the doctor, get your brain scan. And if you remember, we read a while ago that brain fingerprints, they call them, and that would be when they scan your brain, are actually as individualistic as your fingerprints and could be used for biometrics someday in the future. For example, immense value is added if recordings are conducted from identified cell types whose anatomical connections are established, and such an experiment is currently an exceptional tour de force. With new technology, it could become routine. In another example, neuronal populations recorded during complex behavior might be immediately retested with circuit manipulation techniques to determine their causal role in generating the behavior. So let's flip a few switches and see if we can turn it off. Theory and modeling could be woven into successive stages of ongoing experiments, so step up and be our guinea pig enabling bridges to be built from single cells to connectivity to population dynamics. And that means studying you and me as a society and our behaviors. This synthetic approach will enable penetrating solutions to longstanding problems in brain function, but we also emphasize the likelihood of entirely new, unexpected discoveries that will result from new technologies. In some sense, the Brain Initiative scientists who apply the new activity monitoring technology will be like Galileo looking into the heavens with the first optical telescope. So what is this new activity monitoring technology? Similarly, new perturbation tools and quantitative approaches are likely to yield extraordinary insights. So this would be pre-perturbation skills, like things to make you mad. You can push a button to make you mad and then see what happens inside your brain while you're getting mad. Extraordinary insights into the relationship between brain activity and mental functions. We expect to discover new forms of neural coding as an exciting discovery as the place of cells and new forms of neural dynamics that underlie neural computations. Now, if you remember, we looked on Monday about a big meeting that was going on in D.C. 30,000 brain scientists all met this week to attend the Society for Neuroscience meeting in Washington, D.C. And the hot topic this year was mental disorders and how some new technologies would allow us to cure them. They also discussed the brain organoids that were implanted into the rats and some of the growing of the connectivity that happened inside of those abhorrent experiments. Well, now let's hop over to December of 2016 with the passage of the 21st Century Cures Act. There was a section 2061 that was called the National Neurological Conditions Surveillance System. And we read about this before, but I want to bring it up again because all these things are connected, even though they don't seem to be on the surface. Part P of Title III of the Public Health Service Act is amended by inserting, after Section 3995, the following: surveillance of neurological diseases. In general, the Secretary, acting through the Director for the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, and in coordination with other agencies, as the Secretary determines, shall, as appropriate, 1. Enhance and expand infrastructure and activities to track the epidemiology of neurological diseases, and 2. Incorporate information obtained through such activities into an integrated surveillance system, which may consist of or include a registry to be known as the National Neurological Conditions Surveillance System. Ding, ding, ding. Guys, they really are coming after our brains. Research. The Secretary shall ensure that the National Neurological Conditions Surveillance System is designed in a manner that facilitates further research on neurological diseases, so we can put flashes of light through your mobile devices when you've been diagnosed as one of our targets. C, content and carrying out subsection A, the Secretary shall provide for the collection and the storage of information on the incidence and the prevalence of neurological diseases in the United States, as well as, to the extent practicable, shall provide for the collection and the storage of other available information on neurological diseases, including information related to persons living with neurological diseases who chose to participate, such as their demographics, their risk factors, their diagnosis, and progression markers. And they may provide for the collection and storage of information relevant to the analysis, such as information concerning a natural history of the disease, prevention of the disease, the detection, management, and treatment approaches for the diseases, and the development of outcome measures. And it may address issues identified during the consultation under the subsection, as well as initially may address a limited number of neurological diseases. In carrying out the section, the Secretary shall consult with individuals with appropriate expertise, which may include epidemiologists with experience in disease surveillance, representatives of national voluntary health associations that focus on neurological diseases, have demonstrated experience in research care or patient services, health information technology experts or other information management specialists, clinicians with expertise in neurological diseases, and research scientists with experience conducting translational research or utilizing surveillance systems for other scientific research purposes. Federal departments and agencies such as the National Institute of Health and the Department of Veterans Affairs will be involved, and other federal departments and agencies, as well as state and local agencies, will identify, build upon, leverage, and coordinate among existing data and surveillance systems, surveys, registries, and other federal public health infrastructure units where practicable. Public access, subject to subsection H, Secretary shall ensure the information and analysis in the National Neurological Condition Surveillance System are available as appropriate to the public, including researchers. So you're going to become part of a research project. Of course, there will be privacy, and they shall ensure that the information and analysis in the National Neurological Condition Surveillance System are made available to the extent permitted by applicable federal and state law and in a manner that protects your personal privacy to the extent required by applicable federal and state privacy law at a minimum. Unless, of course, some sort of crime is perceived to have been committed, then they might dig into your neurological profile and see what makes you tick. That's all I can think of. You remember we had talked about predictive policing and some of the future utilizing AI for behavioral analytics and solving crime. Guys, when thought crime becomes an actual crime, or when they start looking at behavioral changes and think that that may be leading you down the path of future pre-crime, don't think that these databases about neurological surveillance aren't going to become important. Speaking about artificial intelligence and pre-crime, we've talked about some of the things that are going on in China with the Hingzhou and the city brain, and also with NEOM over in Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia moving to the forefront of artificial intelligence. We're going to talk a little bit about a few things that I saw about that, maybe if we can get there today. But I ran across a story on Monday. China is now developing, so not only are they developing the city brain run by AI that they are going to export globally, coming to a city near you, but they are also developing a police station that is powered by artificial intelligence. We also read about lawyers and judges in the future being artificial intelligence as well. As if replacing pharmacists with robots wasn't enough, China wants technology to fill in for the police as well. It was announced earlier this week, and this was from November 12, 2017, that a police station powered by AI is now being built in China. And the unmanned police station will open in one of China's capital cities. A report out of China reveals that this unmanned police station will help with the registration services as well as driver examinations through a simulator. It is also going to feature advanced facial recognition technology developed by Tencent. And we read that Tencent was also involved in that city brain project as well. Since it is not going to be staffed by humans who have rights and need to take a break, the station is going to be open to the public 24/7. Well, that's one of the benefits now, isn't it? No sick days, no pension, and open 24/7. The report also mentions that citizens will be required to use their face as a means of identification, and soon in the future, your brain scans. And that's really what has advanced facial recognition technology from Tencent is for. This means that citizens won't have to fill out forms or generate logins, because remember, those are so resource intensive for your puny little human brains. Image recognition will pull up all of the necessary information that is required to help them out. It is an interesting concept and one that might eventually be expanded to cover other sections of the government bureaucracy. And this just goes to show that China really is serious about advancing the use of artificial intelligence in the daily lives of its citizens. So what's going to happen once we tie AI to the machine? We're going to feed all this data into the databases and allow the machine to find all of our chinks in our armor, including what makes us tick and how to flip switches with little flashes of light to be able to garner an effect in our brains. Well, listen, technology and the future of mental health treatment, technology has opened up a new frontier in mental health support and data collection. Mobile devices like cell phones, smartphones, and tablets are giving the public and doctors and researchers new ways to access help, monitor progress, and increase understanding of mental well-being. Mobile mental health support can be simple but very effective. For example, anyone with the ability to send a text message can contact a crisis center, but that's not what we're really talking about. New technology can also be packaged into an extremely sophisticated application for smartphones or tablets. Such apps might use the device's built-in sensors to collect information on a user's typical behavior patterns, ding ding, and if the app detects a change in that behavior, it may provide a signal that help is needed before a crisis occurs, ding ding ding, or pre-crime, and dispatch the drones. Some apps are standalone programs that promise to improve memory or thinking skills, and others help the user connect to a peer counselor or to another healthcare professional. Excitement about the huge range of opportunities for Dr. Smartphone has led to a burst of app development, and there are thousands of mental health apps available on iTunes and Android app stores, and the number is growing every year. However, this new technology frontier includes a lot of uncertainty, and there is very little industry regulation, ding ding, and very little information on apps' effectiveness, which can lead consumers to wonder if they should trust the apps at all. Before focusing on the state of science and where that may lead, it is important to look at the advantages and the disadvantages of expanding mental health treatment and research into a mobile world. Experts believe the technology has a lot of potential for clients and clinicians, and a few of the advantages of mobile care include convenience, anonymity, or so they say, an introduction to care, lower costs, let's keep the healthcare costs down, become part of the Internet of Things, services to more people, like those disadvantaged people in Africa with 5G, interest, 24-hour service, because now you don't have to pay people, consistency, and support. This new era of mental health technology offers great opportunities, but also raises a number of concerns. Tackling potential problems will be an important part of making sure a new app provides benefits without causing harm. And that is why the mental health community and software developers are focusing on this now. They need effectiveness, they need guidance, privacy, regulation, and they want to make sure that they don't oversell a program. So what do? There is illness management and supported care, and this is a type of app that adds additional support by allowing the user to interact with another human being. The app may also connect with peers. Remember that Wobot? The artificially intelligent mental health professional online. And it may send information to a trained healthcare provider who then can offer guidance and therapy options. Researchers are also working to learn how much human interaction people need for an app-based treatment to be effective. There is also a passive symptom tracking, and a lot of effort is going into developing apps that can collect data that use sensors that are built into smartphones. These sensors can record movement patterns and social interactions, such as the number of texts or phone calls you make, as well as behaviors at different times of the day, vocal tone and speed, remember being able to diagnose disease by the sound of your voice, and more. And in the future, apps may be able to analyze this data to determine the user's real-time state of mind. Such apps may be able to recognize changes in behavioral patterns that signal a mood episode such as mania, depression, or psychosis before it occurs, and then send out the ambulance with the white coat. An app may not replace a mental health professional, but it may be able to alert caregivers when the client needs additional attention. Ding, ding. And the goal is to create apps that support a range of users, including those with serious mental illnesses. Guys, this is not going a good place because this is how they're going to take a majority of us down, those who are the troublemakers with oppositional defiant disorder per the DSM-4 or 5. Data collection apps can gather data without any help from the user. Receiving information from a large number of individuals at the very same time can increase researchers' understanding of mental health and help them develop better interventions. What if we don't want to be intervened with, is my question. Well, maybe all you need is a few flashes of light from your smartphone. Are smartphones draining your brain? Make sure you let them into your life, because it will be your new doctor. A new study from the Macomb School finds that your cognitive capacity is reduced when your smartphone is within reach and pushing that dopamine button, even if it is off. Marketing assistant professor Adrian Ward and the co-authors conducted experiments with nearly 800 smartphone users to measure the time and how well people can complete tasks when their devices are nearby. In one experiment, the researchers asked study participants to sit at a computer and take a series of tests that required their full concentration. The tests were geared to measure participants' available cognitive capacity, and that is the brain's finite ability to hold and process data at any given time. At the start, participants were randomly instructed to place their smartphones either on their desk face down or in their pocket or personal bag or in another room. All participants were asked to turn their phones to silent, and researchers found that the participants with their phones in another room significantly outperformed those with their phones on their desk and only slightly outperformed those participants who had kept their phones in their pocket or their bag out of sight, out of mind. We are seeing a linear trend that suggests that as the smartphone becomes more noticeable, participants' available cognition capacity decreases. And if that isn't by design, I don't know what is. These findings indicate that close presence of one's smartphone reduces your available cognitive capacity and impairs your cognitive functioning, even though people feel that they are giving their full attention and focus to the task at hand. Your conscious mind isn't thinking about your smartphone, but the process of requiring yourself not to think about something uses up some of your CPU cycles of your limited cognitive resources. It is called brain drain, says Ward. In another experiment, the researchers looked at how a person's self-reported smartphone dependence, that is, how strongly the person feels that he or she needs their smartphone to get through the day, affected their cognitive capacity. And participants performed the same series of computer-based tests as the first group and were randomly assigned to keep their smartphones either on their desk face up, in a pocket or their bag, or in another room. And in this experiment, some participants were also instructed to turn their phones off. The researchers found that participants who were the most dependent on their smartphones performed worst compared to their less dependent peers, and only when they kept their smartphones on the desk or in their pocket or bag. It is a double whammy, says Ward. People who depend more on their phones will benefit the most from leaving them in another room when they have something important to focus on, but they are probably the least willing to do that. Ding, ding, that is the dopamine addiction. Ward and his colleagues also found, and those will be the same people that are going to step right up for their brain-computer interface. Ward and his colleagues also found that it didn't matter whether a person's smartphone was turned on or off, or whether it was face up or down on the desk. Having a smartphone within the slight or easiest reach reduces a person's ability to focus and perform a task. And that is because part of their brain is actively working not to pick up or to use the phone. It's not that the participants were distracted because they were getting notifications. The mere presence of their smartphone was enough to reduce their cognitive capacity. Ward recommends smartphone users leave their phones in a separate room for a specific period of time during the day in order to dedicate all their available mind power to the task and the people that they deem important. And I do that sometimes when I need a charge. I put my charger on the other side of the room, plug it in, and let it just sit there for an hour or two and charge. And then when I come back, I can check it. But otherwise, it sits all by its lonesome. All right. So now we've talked about our devices and our addictability to our devices. We looked at an experiment that showed even if you don't have your cell phone in hand, it can influence your cognitive capacity. So now let's take a look at optogenetics. We took a look at how flashes of light can flip switches in the brain and cause changes in behavior. I found a story this morning titled One Step Optogenetics for Hacking the Nervous System. Engineers have taken one of biotech's hottest tools, and that would be optogenetics, and they've made it better. And this was dated February of 2017. This 12-year-old technique, which enables scientists to control cells with light, typically requires a multi-step process and several surgeries on animals. But Polina Ekaleva at the Massachusetts Institute of Technologies and her colleagues came up with an engineering solution that combines all of those steps into one, improving the function of the device. Optogenetics enables researchers to hack into the body's electrical system with far more precision than traditional electrical stimulation. And the technique involves genetically altering specific neurons so that they can be turned on or off with a simple flash of light. The tool is useful for figuring out the functions in neural circuits, whether you're firing up a few brain cells to see how the body responds, and the mouse might run faster or eat more or become more aggressive depending on which neurons were manipulated. So far, optogenetic research has been limited to animals, or so they say, but keep getting your smart devices. And that's partly because the tool is invasive and the process rather protracted, but don't worry about it, because one of these days they're going to find an easy way to get those opsins into your gray matter. Firstly, the animal's brain cells must be genetically altered, and one way to do that is to incorporate these light-sensitive genes into viral vectors. And remember, we read about that even with CRISPR, putting them into an adenovirus and then infecting the biological organism to get the CRISPR inside of them to be able to genetically modify them. And then inject it into the brain using a small syringe. But we found there's other ways to get things into the brain. We found with nanoparticles, one of the best routes would be through the olfactory system, and that would be inhalation through the nose. The genetic modifications cause the neurons to produce proteins and other cellular elements that, when exposed to light, allow ions to enter, and an influx of sodium ions will activate a neuron, causing it to fire and starting a chain reaction. An influx of chloride ions, on the other hand, will inhibit the neuron. And that got me to thinking, so if one is sodium, activates the ion, and one is chloride, and it inhibits the neuron, what happens when you eat sodium chloride, such as table salt? So once the genetic modification has taken hold, researchers implant a device that delivers light, usually a silica optical fiber or light-emitting diode, more affectionately known as an LED, to the modified cells, and then researchers can start turning neurons on and off and correlating it with behavioral changes. In a third step, the resulting activity in the brain is recorded, and that information helps scientists be sure which neurons are firing and not firing during behavioral experiments. But recording requires implantation of electrodes that, in combination with light sources, makes the experiment too cumbersome, so scientists often skip it. But don't worry about it, because we read about with the dragonfly, and I don't know, somewhere in there I remember reading that they had put these little flashing LEDs in front of the eyeballs of the dragonfly. But don't worry about it, because in the future, brain implants will be commonplace. Hold on. I have so many things here. Brain chips that allow you to delete and fight disease, as well as change memories, will create a new breed of superhumans in just 15 years. Brian Johnson's firm Kernel is working on a microchip to be implanted in the brain. We've read a lot about this. There are a lot of companies working on this technology right now, including Elon Musk with his Neuralase. He said that chips will allow people to buy and delete memories as they wish. And rather than being reserved for the rich, Mr. Johnson says that these chips will be democratized, just like your smartphones. Open your arms and accept your brain implant. Implanting a microchip into your brain to unlock its full potential may sound like a plot from the latest science fiction blockbuster, but this futuristic technology could become reality in 15 years, according to Brian Johnson, an expert working on such a device. The chips will allow people to buy and delete memories and will soon be as popular as smartphones, claims Johnson, speaking at a web summit in Lisbon this week. And this was from November 9th of 2017. Mr. Jansen, who is the founder of Kernel, which is a startup developing brain microchips, said that unlocking the potential of the mind is the, quote, single greatest thing humanity can achieve, and probably one of the single most dangerous things. He says, I would expect in around 15 to 20 years, we would have a sufficiently robust set of tools for the brain that we could pose any question we wanted. For example, could I have the perfect memory? Could I delete my memories? Could I increase my rate of learning? Or could I have a brain-to-brain communication? Imagine a scenario where I say, I want to know what it is like to be a cowboy in the American West in the 1800s. And someone creates that experience mentally. It's going to be like the holodeck in your brain. I am able to take that memory and purchase it from one person and experience that. And you might think that such a device would be reserved for the rich. Mr. Johnson believes that these microchips will become democratized like your cell phone. He says the bigger question is working on this a luxury or a necessity? Well, I don't understand what we are being so scared of losing. I don't know why it would not be a singular focus of the human race, because everything we do stems from our brain. And that is one of the very frightening things. You know, one of the things I've always told my daughter is to make sure that you always take care of your brain, because your brain is who you are. And if you hurt your brain, you may not necessarily be the person you are today tomorrow. Kernel is currently working on prototypes of a brain implant device for medical usage in humans. And the firm has started to conduct tests with epilepsy patients in hospitals. And in speaking to IEEE Spectrum, Dr. Berger said, we are testing this in humans now, and we are getting good initial results. We are going forward with the goal of commercializing this prosthesis. But before being able to develop it for healthy people, the firm hopes that this device will be used to improve memory in people with degenerative diseases of things, of course, such as Alzheimer's. Speaking to New Scientist magazine, Mr. Johnson said, the idea is that if you have a loss of memory function, if you remember, DARPA was working on a lot of this technology for traumatic brain injury patients, then you could build a prosthetic for the hippocampus that would help restore the circuitry and restore memory. The first superhumans are those who have deficits to start with, he says. But listen to this. I ran across a story this morning when I was doing some searches. A listener, Matthew, thank you, Matthew, sent me a story about nanobiophotons in regards to optogenetics, I believe. And so I remembered I had read about biophotons before, and that was in regards to plants and living material putting out like a light or an aura, and that is energy that is extracted from the sun. It's like a life force of all living things. Well, doing a quick search on biophotons and the central nervous system in the brain, I came across a PubMed publication from the National Institute of Health Library that was titled, and this is as we're manipulating with light in our brains to flip switches, biophotons, microtubules, and the central nervous system. Is our brain a quote-unquote holographic computer? This raised some very interesting questions. Several experiments show that there is a cell-to-cell communication by light in different types of cells. And the article describes a theoretical mechanism and subcellular structures that could be involved in this phenomenon. Special consideration is given to the nervous system, since it would have to have excellent conditions for such mechanisms. And neurons are large colorless cells with aborizations and have an acute metabolic generating photons, contain little pigments, and have prominent cytoskeletons consisting of hollow microtubules. And it's a lot more than I knew about the brain. And as brains and spinal cords are protected from the environmental light by bone and connective tissue, the signal-to-noise ratio should be high for photons as signals. Fluorescence and absorbing substances should interfere with such a communication system. And all the biogenic amine natures have chosen the ones in strongest fluorescence as neurotransmitters for mood reactions such as serotonin, dopamine, and norepinephrine. And remember, they were talking about using fluorescence in marking neurons in the project with George Church, and they were working on the Apollo project of the brain with IARPA, which is the intelligence, the DARPA for the intelligence agencies. If these mechanisms are of relevance, our brain would have looked upon as a holographic computer. So this would be using light to send signals between neurons. So now what? We have optogenetics for the nervous system, and we now have an incredibly tiny probe. This was just released November 10th, 2017. That can record brain activity like we have never seen before. How excited should we be about this? The more detail we can get on the inner workings of the brain, and maybe even some of those little mini brains, the better our chances of understanding and treating it. And scientists have just unveiled a new high-definition recording probe that is thinner than a human hair. Its developers say that extra accuracy could revolutionize our insight into the brain's wiring, mapping neural networks in ways that have never been possible before, and showing us how different brain activities relate to different behaviors. These new silicon probes are called NeuroPixels, and according to the international team behind them, they could provide invaluable in figuring out how diseases like Alzheimer's, of course, and conditions such as depression take hold of the brain and interfere with its normal function. To understand the brain, we need to understand how a lot of neurons spread all over the brain and work together, says one researcher. And until recently, it was possible to measure the activity of individual neurons within a spot specific in the brain or reveal a larger regional pattern of activity, but not to do the same both at the same time. These wafer-thin probes measure 10 millimeters in length and are just 20 micrometers thick. And despite their small size, they pack in 100 tiny super-sensitive recording spots per millimeter, and enabling them to map the brain in incredible detail, as well as automatically getting data ready for computer analysis in real time, such as the neural activity happens. Compare with that the wireless electrodes in use today, which only have a few dozen sensors fitted on each one. And remember, this is one thing that Elon Musk talked about, and one of the things holding us back right now with some of the brain-computer interfacing is that we did not have any type of HD connection. It was like a 900 baud modem that they were using right now to connect to the brain to the machine. NeuroPixel probes will change what we know and even what we think about as the brain. There is still plenty left to discover about how this most important of organs, fitted with more than 70 billion neurons, actually works. And we are learning all the time about the roles of different areas of the brain and how the brain deals with waste and disease and how it can heal itself. From next year, and that would be 2018, NeuroPixel will make available to scientists at cost. And 400 prototypes are already in use at research centers across the globe. But for now, they are being used solely on mice and rats, and I wonder if they have human brains in them. Animals with brains known to be good models for the human brain. NeuroPixels will allow experiments over long periods of time without restricting the animals. And researchers have already shown how animals fitted with these sensors can move around freely, and one experiment actually lasted 150 days. Another planned study will look at mice foraging for food, and we'll be able to map data from multiple labs to simultaneously record activities of 1,000 neurons in mice covering the animals' entire brains as they all carry out the same task. Eventually, this high-resolution mapping technique should give us a better idea of how emotions are regulated and how decisions are made, as well as all kinds of other insights to be able to be used on humans in the future. And that was my addition. These probes are a game changer, they say, and if you place them appropriately, you can really study how different parts of the brain work together at the neuronal level. Now, why would they want to do that? Well, they would want to do that because they want to be able to, of course, cure your mental disease per the Brain Initiative and the 21st Century Cures Act, but also to be able to develop better artificial intelligence. Now, we had read about Boston Dynamics, who was purchased by Google. They had been making a lot of robots for the war machine. That is where Atlas came from. And Google didn't know what they were going to do with them. Well, they eventually sold them to SoftBank, which, if I'm not mistaken, is a Japanese company. They used to do software and all kinds of stuff. Now they're getting into robotics. Boston Dynamics is still making creepy robots under SoftBank. And this one really caught me. And I think out of most of the robots I've seen in the not-so-distant past, this is one of the ones that scared me the most. Boston Dynamics is back with yet another freaky robot to haunt your nightmares. And the company released a short video today, November 13th, showing off the latest version of MiniSpot. One of the things I noticed about MiniSpot is that he did not have the arm connected to the front of him that could actually turn doorknobs that they showed in a video back about a year ago. MiniSpot is the small, vaguely dog-shaped robot, and they've been working on it for a few years. The newest version is the most compact yet, with all the sensors the robot uses to experience the world. Housed in what might be considered a face and the body, and those sensors used to live at the bottom of the robot's creepy grabber arm. And that's the grabber arm that is no longer on Spot right now. This new mini Spot moves with an eerie lifelikeness as it trundles around a corner in this short clip. But unlike other Boston Dynamic videos of its robots, this one does not show a human kicking, tripping, or otherwise maiming the robot. They don't want to encourage you to do that. But listen, Bill Gates comes out, and he defends AI technology after Stephen Hawking issued another dire warning that it's going to be the worst thing that humanity has ever created. The richest man in the world, good old Billy Gates, has hailed the rise of the robots and new technologies and believes that the benefits will far outweigh any negatives in years to come. And he did this from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Microsoft founder Bill Gates, who is believed to be worth around 86 billion pounds, told an audience at the MIST Global Forum that advancement in robotics and AI will help improve efficiency in a wide range of industries. We need these to solve infectious diseases, and they will help healthcare workers do their job. AI, Gates believes, will transform the working environment in countries across the globe and could eventually be used to help with social care and education and not to enslave humanity. But Stephen Hawking and Elon Musk launched a video just as the UN was convening in Geneva titled Slaughterbots. And it depicts a dystopian future of autonomous killer robots. All right, guys, have an awesome Wednesday.
On the tracks, you can catch.